The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning Glory America, I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on Wednesday, August the 25th in the year 2021. America is rushing towards its greatest crisis since 9/11, and perhaps one with far worse impacts on the national character. For on that terrible day 20 years ago, Americans from New York's finest to the passengers on Flight 93 to the Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld on the lawn of the Pentagon, they all ran towards the danger. Not away from it. 20 years ago, the country rallied together to save people, then grieve and comfort, and then avenge. Now, two decades later, we are leaving Americans and our allies abandoned to the same enemies that brought about that attack in 2001. What a terrible blow to the national soul. Joe Biden's legacy will be this indelible act of cowardice unless he changes course. We have to pray and work to get him to change course, to stay until all Americans get out and as many allies as is humanly possible. Let's begin with Leader McConnell last night with Bill Hemmer and Dana Perino, yesterday with Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer, cut number 15.
Dana, you listed all the critics. It's our NATO allies. And by the way, the NATO allies were there with us. We weren't there all by ourselves. Everybody in our all of our allies realize that this decision has greatly weakened our efforts in the war on terror. The war on terror could be fought two places, over there or over here. And the strategy since 9/11 has actually worked. We've not had another foreign-inspired terrorist attack in the United States in 20 years. We had finally evolved into a policy that was actually working in Afghanistan as well, with a very light footprint. We were keeping the lid on. The barbarians were not in charge of the government. Of course, it was not a Jeffersonian democracy. That's not why we went there in the first place. This was not about nation building. It was about protecting us here at home from foreign terrorist attacks.
There are some who believe the president pulled the plug because he wanted the symbolism for 9/11 20 years removed. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think every president has been tempted by the poll question. If you ask Americans if we've been there too long, they're likely to say yes. If you provide some context, you'd get a totally different answer. My guess is Americans would probably think we've been in Germany, Japan, and South Korea too long if we asked them that question. You have to provide the context. In the war on terror, the idea was to try to combat the terrorists overseas so they could not successfully attack us here at home. That's the mission. It worked. And the president's reckless decision to precipitously withdraw was a clear mistake. And then having no plan to execute the withdrawal was an even bigger mistake. This is a foreign policy blunder of gargantuan proportions that's a stain on our national reputation and will be remembered for decades.
It will forever define Joe Biden as the president who ran away and who has abandoned Americans. Cut number 16, more Leader McConnell.
I think it's a lot worse than Saigon in 1975. There weren't terrorists in Vietnam threatening to attack us here on U.S. soil. This is dramatically worse than Saigon in 1975 because al-Qaeda, on the way back in, the same group with allied terrorist organizations that want to hit us here at home, will be able to operate freely throughout Afghanistan. So this is considerably worse than the fall of Saigon.
Let's go to Congressman Michael Waltz, cut number 13, as he sums up what we are facing if Joe Biden does not depart from his plans.
I served on the ground multiple tours as a Green Beret in Afghanistan. I want to show you a few things and tell you about some of the losses that we've occurred and what the Taliban mindset is. I have here what they called a night letter from the Taliban that I leave hanging on my office wall. This letter was sent not to American military, the Afghan military. It was sent to a school principal. Told him that if he didn't get out of town, he would be beheaded within 24 hours. You know what his crime was? Teaching girls. He stood his ground. They didn't get him, but they got his brother. Beheaded him. Burnt the school to the ground. Chased him, his family into hiding. I leave this up as a reminder of the evil that we're dealing with and what we're condemning these people to. We've talked about our interpreters and our allies. I had one. The guy was such a fighter, we called him Little Spartacus. Spartacus was on the waiting list for the SIV program. He was found at a Taliban checkpoint with American documentation on him. You know what they did? They took him back to his village, beheaded his brothers and his cousins in front of him, and then him, to send a message. That's what thousands of American citizens, and let me use this word, stranded in Afghanistan right now are facing. We are on the cusp of the biggest mass hostage crisis this country has ever seen. This will make 1979 in Tehran look like a sleepover. We cannot abandon Americans. We never leave a fallen comrade. And if Joe Biden doesn't extend that deadline and tell the Taliban, we are going to extend it or else, we're going to leave Americans behind 11 days before the 20th anniversary of September 11th? Are you kidding me? Is that what's really happening right down the street on Pennsylvania Avenue? We stood here bipartisan in April. As soon as he made that announcement and said, if you don't start getting people out right now, you are giving them a death sentence. If you pull our military assets out before you get Americans or allies out, you're consigning them to death, like this school principal and his family. Final thing. America is going to face Al-Qaeda 3.0. The intelligence community has been clear and has briefed us repeatedly. The Taliban taking over means Al-Qaeda 3.0 comes roaring back. Except now we're in a worse position than we were before 2001. We have no bases in the region. Our local allies are being hunted down as we speak. And as you've heard today, the Taliban are going to be armed to the teeth so that when future American soldiers have to go back in to deal with the problem and deal with the incompetence of this administration, how many are going to die now because they're going to have to fight their way through our own equipment, our own damn equipment, to deal with Al-Qaeda 3.0? Are we going to have another Pulse nightclub? Are we going to have another San Bernardino? Are we going to have another 9/11 because of that incompetence? Well, this Congress is going to lead. Our offices right now are operation centers calling gate guards, calling the Kabul airport, guiding people through, telling them how to avoid Taliban checkpoints, our own Congress. It's unbelievable the lack of leadership. So I 100% agree. That blood is and will be on Joe Biden's hands, and this Congress will hold him accountable.
This is a bipartisan sentiment. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy is a Democrat on the House Intel Committee, cut number 19.
I respectfully submit that we have to stay until we get our certainly our American citizens out and as many of our Afghan allies as out as possible. The one thing that probably everybody knows now is that there's also a terrorist threat from ISIS Khorasan, and we have to be mindful of that. But at the end of the day, we cannot leave Americans behind who want to get out.
To that point, based on what you're learning, do you have a sense of how long that might take beyond the August 31st deadline?
I don't. And this is a piece of information that I understand is fluid, but unfortunately, we don't have a lot of precision on the issue of, you know, the number of Americans left in Afghanistan who want to leave. We don't have a good understanding of the number of SIV people who are left who want to leave. And so I think that
the lowest number of Americans, the lowest number is 5,000. Representative Andy Kim, Democrat, last cut in this segment, cut 20.
This effort is one that has certainly led me to believe that the mission is not something that we can accomplish by the end of this month. And I strongly, urgently urge the president to reconsider his continued aim towards August 31st to be able to get our mission done. We will not be able to get our mission done by that time, based off of what I've seen and based off of what we've experienced so far.
Unless the president changes his decision, this will be his legacy, an indelible stain on his name and everyone who worked for him. We cannot leave Americans behind. We cannot. The mission must last as long as there are Americans to rescue. We send our warriors to get Americans, not to run away from them. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Going over the reactions to the president's scurrilous and cowardly announcement that we are leaving Americans behind. He's got to change his mind. Congressman Mike Gallagher took to the floor of the House yesterday, cut number 18.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, I rise today to urge defeat of the previous question so that we can consider my bill 5071 to ensure no Americans are left behind in Afghanistan. Over the past week, we've all seen the horrifying images coming out of Kabul. Babies being passed over barbed wire, two-year-olds trampled to death, bodies falling from C-17s. These pictures are now forever painted onto American history, and they don't depict the orderly withdrawal that the president promised. These are instead portraits of chaos, of tragedy, and dishonor. And yet the administration assures us they planned for every contingency. Was the plan for America to give billions of dollars worth of U.S. military equipment to the Taliban? Was the plan to put terrorists effectively in charge of security around the Kabul airport? Was the plan to leave over 10,000 American citizens stranded behind enemy lines? Madam Speaker, if this was the plan, a plan to surrender so incompetently and on such ignominious terms, then our country can't withstand any more of this administration's plans. It's time for this body, this Congress, to act to hold the administration accountable and save lives. This bill would do that by requiring daily reporting to Congress on the number of Americans left in the country and the number of Afghan allies that are seeking refuge. The bill also critically prohibits the president from withdrawing our forces until all Americans who want out are safely out of the country. Right now, it seems, the president is doubling down on this August 31st withdrawal date, despite strong bipartisan opposition and pushback. Make no mistake, if we get out on August 31st, we are going to condemn thousands to death. I don't care what secret side deal was struck with the Taliban. This is America. We don't leave anybody behind. A great country such as ours takes care of our citizens and our allies. Our enemies are mocking our surrender right now. We've all seen the images. The Taliban, for example, just mocked the iconic image of Marines raising the flag over Iwo Jima. It may be too late to save face because of this debacle, but it is not too late to save lives. This isn't a news cycle that will blow over. This isn't a narrative that you can spin. We are talking about American lives. And we're talking about America's honor. Let's act now before this crisis, and with it, America's standing in the world deteriorates even further.
In 1904, the very first famous hostage crisis occurred on the watch of Teddy Roosevelt. A man named Perdik Harris was taken hostage by Tunisian, I believe, pirates. And TR issued a threat: Perdik Harris alive or Razuli dead. And since then, we have used a mixture of sticks and carrots. We have never threatened to abandon Americans. Never. That is Joe Biden's innovation. The terrible one. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. The morning after a disastrous speech by Joe Biden, his fourth attempt, incoherent still, to explain why he is on the verge of abandoning hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans. I hope it's not 10,000 Americans, but it could be. They won't tell us anything. And at least tens of thousands of allies who assisted our troops over 20 years of conflict. Congressman Mike McCaul, ranking Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, also reminded us of the threat that remains from al-Qaeda in the country. Cut number 12.
You know, we should be talking about Afghanistan this week. We should have a resolution on the floor. But instead, you know, Pelosi had to cut the our classified briefing short so she can negotiate this $3.5 trillion, mm-hmm. Bill, massive tax and spending. I think that we need to be focused on this at hand. Yeah. The administration obviously had no plan or strategy. They allowed this fantasy dream that we could negotiate with the Taliban all the way to the end. And now we can't get all of our American citizens out of Afghanistan. It will have long-term consequences to our national security. Yeah. We will be talking about this for a while.
And let me ask you about that, because, you know, you are now with House Foreign Affairs. You were the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee with the Taliban back in charge of Afghanistan, with ISIS still there, with al-Qaeda still there. Paint me a scenario of what Afghanistan is going to be like in terms of the potential threat to the United States 6 months or a year out.
Well, when I chaired Homeland Security, the ISIS and the caliphate were on the rise in Iraq and Syria. I had briefings, probably one external operation per month that we had to stop that were planning to kill Americans or our allies. We're going back to pre-9/11. There are probably more al-Qaeda in Afghanistan now than pre-9/11. And with that, John, the threat's going to return. They will conduct external operations. And what I worry about most, as I did when I was chairman of Homeland, was the border itself, which is so wide open that these special interest aliens on the terror watch list can now get into the United States. That is going to be the big threat moving forward.
Congressman Jim Banks, chairman of the House Republican Study Committee, also on the Armed Services Committee, reminded people of exactly how much more dangerous al-Qaeda and other terrorists in Afghanistan have become in the intervening 20 years. Cut number 14.
I wore the uniform proudly in 2014 and 15 when I deployed to Afghanistan, and I served on the front lines of the effort there to train, advise, and equip the Afghan army and the Afghan police. As a foreign military sales officer, my job was to help on the front end and the back end of acquiring American military equipment to turn it over to the Afghans and train them on how to use it. So you can imagine how shameful I find it that today all of that equipment has fallen into the hands of the Taliban. Because of the negligence of this administration and the hasty retreat that they led out of Afghanistan, they have left $85 billion worth of American equipment in the hands of our enemy, the Taliban. 75,000 vehicles, over 200 airplanes and helicopters, over 600,000 small arms and light weapons. The Taliban now has more Black Hawk helicopters than 85% of the countries in the world. But it's not just weapons. They have night vision goggles, body armor, and, unbelievably, the Taliban now has biometric devices, which have the fingerprints, eye scans, and biographical information of all of the Afghans who helped us and were on our side over the last 20 years. There is no plan by this administration to get those weapons back. There is no plan to account for any of this equipment or these weapons. I can tell you that members of the Armed Services Committee on the Republican side will be fighting for amendments to the National Defense Authorization Act next week when we mark up that important bill to do what the Biden administration has failed to do. Let me be very clear. If any American is harmed, injured, or killed and not safely evacuated out of Afghanistan, or if any of these weapons or this military equipment is used to harm, injure, or kill an American now or at any time in the future, the blood is on Joe Biden's hands.
House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy then stepped to the podium, cut number 11.
We have all just left the briefing. It is a classified briefing. Cannot talk about what was said inside, but I'll tell you this. I'm less confident after leaving that briefing. There's no possible way that we can get every American that's still in Afghanistan out in the next 7 days. We are just 3 weeks away from the 20th anniversary of 9/11. At no time should America ever bend or allow the Taliban to tell us when we have to stop bringing Americans out. We should stay until every single American is able to get out of Afghanistan. And we should use every recourse possible to make that happen. And we should not negotiate it. We should explain that this is what is going to happen, and anybody in our way to stop us from bringing an American out will be in danger. I have a number of members that are here. Unfortunately, much like our other briefings, it was cut off short. There are members still in line and veterans who wish to ask questions. The Democrats felt that we could only have the 90 minutes, no other time. As I watch other countries and our allies across this world bring their bodies back together of government to work on how to bring their citizens home, the Democrats bring us back to spend trillions of dollars. They fight because they can't bring a rule up. They spend their time on phones trying to twist arms to get people to vote, whereas they should drop that. And our entire focus, Republican, Democrat, independent alike, should be nothing else than bringing our Americans home.
We should. Absolutely right. Richard Engel of NBC News on MSNBC last night, cut 26.
If you step back and you look at what is going on, this is the United States after 20 years. This war used to be called Operation Enduring Freedom. And it's turned out not to be enduring, and they're not leaving behind a society that is free. It is only free according to what the Taliban says it will be free. If the Taliban promises that it will be free. So you could also look at this as a tremendously humiliating moment of American humiliation, right? Leaving, forced to leave on the Taliban's clock and with the Taliban's good graces. So tactically it makes sense. But I'm not sure how history will.
It does not make sense tactically. We are abandoning Americans for the first time in our history. Lindsey Graham was on Hannity's show last night. He said this to Sean, cut number 34.
Well, number one, you got the vice president of the United States talking about what you should do for Christmas in the middle of the biggest blunder since 9/11. You know, ISIS and al-Qaeda have got to be licking their chops after hearing this. What happened here? Biden made a political decision to get everybody, all the troops out by September the 11th. He didn't care about those who helped us. He didn't think through how to get the American citizens out first. He had a political goal. And when the Taliban were advancing, he didn't realize this puts everything into a chaotic environment. As to what to do next, it's over. It is over. Joe Biden has made up his mind. He's capitulated to the Taliban. Everything that Ali North said is right, we should do. But we now left thousands of people behind, and we're setting the stage for another 9/11. Joe Biden created a perfect storm to abandon those who helped us and create another 9/11 for this country. You know what I'm worried about in Christmas? I'm worried about an al-Qaeda or ISIS attack against the United States coming from Afghanistan. That's what I'm worried about this Christmas.
This is bipartisan concern. This is not a partisan attack on an incompetent and indeed distant president. Jason Crow, Democrat of Colorado, cut number 33.
This is not without risk. I think we should be extremely clear about this. This is a very complicated, very high-risk mission. But I think we also have to be clear that if we aren't willing to use the U.S. military to protect U.S. citizens and our partners and our friends, then what will we use our military for? This falls squarely within the wheelhouse of why we have the biggest, strongest military in the world, and that is to protect our people.
Of course it does. Jason Crow, you are right. an Afghan, unknown name, outside the airport, summing it up. Cut number 31.
And their parents are inside, and their children are outside.
Where are the children?
Right here. They're standing right here.
Amid the chaos, we were shown two children apparently left behind when their parents were among the few to be admitted here.
Mr. Biden, you did this, you planned this, you made the deal with the Taliban. This is the consequences of it. This is the repercussions of it. Mr. Biden, it's your ill calculation. You were against Trump, now we are against you. Go to hell, Biden!
They are, of course, angry with the president because he is abandoning them. But the American citizens have to be afraid of showing their faces. We don't even know how many there are. Ann Parnell on ABC World News Tonight with David Muir last night, summing up 37.
Tens of thousands have now fled, but many still unable to get through. I pressed General Sullivan, who's in charge of civilian evacuations on the base, whether all Afghans who helped the U.S. mission will be evacuated from the country.
How confident are you that all American citizens who want to leave, all Afghans who risk their lives to help us in this mission, will get out in the next 7 days?
And so what I can guarantee is we will get as many out as we possibly can with the time we have available.
Which implies some will be left behind.
I won't speculate on that. All I can say is we will get as many out as we possibly can.
And so let's bring in Ian Pannell, reporting from the airport in Kabul for us again tonight. And Ian, I want to get back to what the president said just before we came on the air tonight. He said this August 31st deadline to withdraw all U.S. troops depends on the Taliban continuing to cooperate. The president also saying he's mindful of the increasing risks on the ground there, not only from ISIS, but from the Taliban itself, so far cooperating with the U.S., but the president said there's a serious risk of that breaking down at some point as well. Give us a sense here. You're at the airport. How do you get all of the Americans out, all of the Afghans who helped us out, and U.S. troops out by 1 week from today?
I mean, that is the key question, David, and I just don't see how that is possible. Perhaps you can get all American citizens out. We've seen a massive uptick in the number of airlifts, people going through this site here. The Marines are working around the clock to try and facilitate getting people onto the camp and out of the country. But this is a huge base. There are thousands of troops here, and it's going to take days just to get the troops out, to retrograde the base, and that means there's a very narrow window to get the people into the camp and out of the country. And it seems to me it's going to be almost impossible to guarantee that the Afghans who risk their lives to help us to get them out of the country. David?
Priority number one, Americans. Priority number two, allies. If we get the Americans out, it will be a fiasco, but not an abandonment of fellow citizens. Let us wait and see and pray that we get them out. ReliefFactor.com is a sponsor of the show. I take it every morning right now for the simple reason that after this show and after this disaster of the last 2 weeks, all I can do is go out and walk or run, walk it off, because I'm so angry with the cowardice of the White House and this indelible stain on America. It's a national crisis of the spirit and of our courage. We have never abandoned Americans before. So get your relieffactor.com. $19.95 gets you started. It will get you exercising. And boy, especially when it's stressful, you need to do it. I would have said this after 9/11. I would have said this after during the financial panic of 2008. It's always important to keep moving to work the stress off. And that's where Relief Factor comes in. Great sponsor. $19.95 gets you started. Come back. One more clip to play. And then I've got to read you a column in the United Kingdom's The Telegraph because it's damning. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. Condemnations of President Biden's scurrilous decision to abandon Americans have been bipartisan and widespread. So have the predictions of disaster looming. Jay Johnson, former Secretary of Homeland Security under President Obama, went on MSNBC yesterday and said this, cut 36.
And I believe that the situation at the airport is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. This is a country of 38 million people. We've got to deal with the American citizens, those who qualify for special immigrant visas, but then those who will also qualify for refugee status under our laws. And that population could snowball.
Snowball. The priority two contractor assistance aren't even mentioned by Secretary Johnson. Final cut, John Roberts on Fox News. That leads me to the Telegraph's editorial. Cut number 29, John Roberts on Fox.
There's been some new developments in that as well. There was a virtual meeting of the G7 leaders this morning. According to Reuters, Boris Johnson, the UK prime minister, has said that the G7 had an agreement that it would tell the Taliban that it's going to take longer than August the 31st to get everybody out, that the Taliban just has to deal with that. And then that whole thing was undercut by the White House coming out and saying that President Biden is going to adhere to the August 31st deadline. And in the middle of all this, we appear to have the Taliban pushing the modern world around. Where are we here?
Where are we is in a calamity. The Wall Street Journal's lead editorial this morning is Biden's rush to the Afghan exits, but it's not the most important piece today. That is here in my hand from the British newspaper The Telegraph. Titled, it's by Nick Allen, the U.S. editor of The Telegraph. Joe Biden's betrayal. Allies can never trust this president again. Pointless G7 meeting framed one of America's most embarrassing retreats as its great success. It begins. Joe Biden gave a speech on Tuesday night that was an affront to his allies, to desperate Afghans, and to the American public. After 20 years of the United States' longest war, its commander-in-chief spoke for less than 13 minutes. And he spent the first five of those minutes talking about his domestic economic agenda. Now to Afghanistan, Mr. Biden said, eventually, as many wondered if he had forgotten there was an international crisis going on. The eagerly awaited address at the White House Roosevelt Room, which was billed as the president's response to the Afghanistan crisis, had TV networks waiting for hours with bated breath. It was then inexplicably delayed several times, ultimately for 5 hours. What was Mr. Biden agonizing over all afternoon? Perhaps it was whether or not to tell the truth about his hasty and disastrous withdrawal. In the end, Biden tried to hoodwink viewers in the U.S. instead. According to Mr. Biden, there was strong agreement between leaders he had spoken to virtually in a G7 meeting. There wasn't. The U.K., France, and Germany all wanted to extend the August 31st deadline. The U.S. president didn't. Mr. Biden then reeled off figures about how many planes had taken off from the Kabul airport, framing this most embarrassing retreat as a great success. The deadline could not be pushed back, he added, because the U.S. military was at risk of a terrorist attack. But surely that's why they were in Afghanistan in the first place, to take out terrorists. As for the G7 meeting, it was no consultation with allies, as Mr. Biden suggested in his speech. The president had already made his decision beforehand not to extend the evacuation deadline. He told Boris Johnson that in no uncertain terms on the phone the previous evening. So what was the point of having a meeting at all? It was for Mr. Biden, as he is wont to do, paying lip service to U.S. allies. Minutes after the G7 meeting was over, the White House released a prepared statement confirming that he would not be taking a blind bit of notice of them. According to one of the White House insider who previously worked with Mr. Biden, the two chief architects of Afghan policy, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Secretary of State Tony Blinken, they've never really meant what they said about the importance of alliances. It's just slogans. Quote, having worked with a lot of these guys, they believe their own rhetoric and don't feel that it compels them to actually take firm steps, the source said. A lot of them were convinced simply by showing up in Cornwall for the G7 and saying the right things to leaders that the UK would be sufficient, that they, the Brits, would think at least he, Mr. Biden, isn't throwing tweets at us. There's a disconnect between what he, Mr. Biden, is telling leaders and the public and what's happening. As for Mr. Biden's speech, it was sold as an update on efforts to rescue Americans and vulnerable Afghans from the nightmare of Taliban rule. But with an audience of millions tuning in, Mr. Biden instead used it to score political points promoting his infrastructure bill. It was shameful. That's Nick Allen in The Telegraph. It was shameful. This is a crisis of the national soul. It is as bad, if not worse, than 9/11. Thousands more died, although we don't know how many people will die as a result of this. It will be tens of thousands in Afghanistan. I don't know how many Americans there are. We don't know how many are going to get out. It's going to be the biggest hostage crisis in American history. We have never abandoned Americans to terrorists before. This Biden legacy will simply be an indelible act of cowardice unless he changes course. So pray that he does. Call your congressman. Call your senator. Send notes to the White House. He is trying to resolutely ask and ask you to pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, to turn the page, to look at the $1 trillion in spending, to worry about COVID, anything except his utterly, utterly feckless disaster in Afghanistan. More ahead on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Congressman Mike Gallagher, whose speech I played for you earlier today. Good morning, Congressman. I think this is a crisis that we haven't faced since 9/11. I think it's worse than 9/11 because we ran towards the danger and tried to save people, then now we're abandoning them. What do you think is the president going to stick with this?
It seems like the president is doubling down on the August 31st deadline. And what is shocking to me, we had a brief with Secretary Blinken, Secretary Austin, General Milley, et cetera, yesterday. And there was very strong bipartisan pushback on the August 31st deadline. In fact, some of the strongest statements pushing back on that came from my Democratic colleagues, particularly those who are veterans who've served in Afghanistan and in uniform in other parts of the world, were very forceful in telling the administration to their face that this is a disaster. And I think there was a recognition by the administration that we can't get all of our people, let alone the thousands of SIV applicants out, or just, you know, women seeking asylum who risk being killed or brutally tortured at the hands of the Taliban, that we can't get them out by August 31st. And yet a few hours later, the president of the United States went on TV and doubled down on the August 31st deadline, which is completely arbitrary, or let me rather say is solely intended to get us out before September 11th, 2021. And as we've discussed before, Hugh, whoever in the White House decided it would be a good idea to try and get everyone out by September 11th, 2021, and thinking that that would be some positive PR win for the United States, should be fired, because that's a huge, huge propaganda win for the Taliban. And now it's also put us in the practical position on the ground of being entirely dependent on the largesse of the Taliban to get our people out. And I guarantee you, we're going to leave thousands of people behind. And that's unacceptable for the United States of America.
Congressman Gallagher, I'd like to point to two lies. The first lie is that we were obliged to leave by May 1. The Taliban broke the agreement at least as early as March when they attacked forward operating base Chapman and wounded seven Americans. So they violated the agreement. We're already beyond the May 1 deadline. There is no agreement, and there is no need to go. Secondly, there's a terrorist threat. Every American who's been in Afghanistan, including you, has been under a terrorist threat whenever they have been there. We've got 6,000 of our finest Marines and the 101st Airborne. I know I don't want any of them hurt either. But what do you make of those two arguments that we've already extended the deadline and we're under a terrorist threat?
Well, of course, the Doha agreement was conditions based, and one of the conditions was that the Taliban not allow Al Qaeda to operate from their territory. And of course, they did. I believe even the UN pointed that out at one point. And if you don't think that's true, then there's evidence in the form of the fact that we've killed Al Qaeda operatives on Afghanistan soil in that timeline. So clearly, they violated the agreement. More to the point, there's just nothing that bound Biden to keeping the Doha agreement. There's nothing that said we couldn't have altered it in a variety of ways. And I think this idea that you're starting to see bubble up in the Beltway media, I would sort of commend David Ignatius's latest article, because I think he really gets the thinking among Biden's defenders. That now the Taliban could somehow be a security partner against ISIS, Khorasan, or other terrorist groups in the country. That's what they're betting on right now. And I think that is a terrible bet that's at odds with the way the Taliban operates. So there was nothing that was boxing President Biden into a particular timeline. The Taliban was absolutely in violation of the agreement and the fact that the president hasn't shown one iota of humility throughout this crisis, to me, suggests he's not learning anything. I wrote an entire dissertation on the conditions under which presidents will make changes in response to bad things happening. And I think Biden has demolished my argument, because part of it was that presidents with foreign policy experience are more willing to make changes and more nimble in the making of the change. And Biden certainly has a lot of foreign policy experience, but it turns out it's all the wrong kind of foreign policy experience. In fact, I think he has a perfect record. It's a record of being wrong on everything in modern foreign policy history.
Well, Congressman Gallagher, I want to establish one thing, and I'll come back and play this tape when terrible things happen. There is a direct line, and we can see it. It's known as duty, breach, causation, damages. It's the tort. We know what's going to come out of Afghanistan. Zawahiri is going to show up. They've got munitions dumps. They've got fighters. They are going to go there. They're going to dispatch terrorists around the world. They're going to fund terrorists around the world. That will all be on Joe Biden. Not only that, we're going to see hostage after hostage after hostage. Is there any doubt in your mind that that's what we're going to see?
No, the hostage crisis in particular, the looming hostage crisis, is really what worries me. I mean, the State Department couldn't even give us a number. When pressed by Democrats, I would tell you, pressed by Democrats on how many Americans are in country, could not even give us a number. So we're cutting and running without even knowing how many people we're leaving behind. But make no mistake, we are leaving people behind. And just think of all of the terrible situations that's going to put us in going forward. I don't know if we're going to see ISIS-style beheadings, but we could see massive extortion at a minimum. Just absolutely.
Well, did they give you a minimum number? I understand. Kirby has said, Admiral Kirby has said many times, Ned Price has said, Americans don't have to register. We're not sure. It's the same talking point. And the only question, what's the minimum number about which we are certain that are there and have not been able to get out? Is it 100? Is it 500? Is it 5,000? Do they have any minimum number?
No number at all, at least from what I saw. They resisted providing a specific number, which is incredible. Now, their argument is, okay, when people come into Afghanistan, they're encouraged to register with the embassy. Some do, some don't, and then some don't deregister when they leave the country. I understand, but we should at least have some range of an estimate about how many we
How many have contacted you? Right?
Exactly.
Like, how many have contacted you? Because you've got a list. Now, my question is, have people forgotten Danny Pearl? Have they forgotten the woman journalist in Syria? Have they forgotten the Beirut CIA station chief? These are fanatics. It's not like we're giving they're pirates. They're the absolute worst people in the world. And we're abandoning Americans to it. It's mind boggling.
And by the way, the Taliban has American hostages right now. To me, I don't understand why, if we're going to make this humiliating surrender agreement, why it didn't even include getting some of the hostages back that we know they have. The other thing I'd say, Hugh, is, you know, if the White House continues to make this argument that, well, don't worry about the collapse of our position in Afghanistan, leaving behind American citizens, you know, the fact that we don't have the ability to do over the horizon counterterrorism there. It's all about China and the Pacific. Our past actions and our reputation in a different theater doesn't matter in terms of our ability to deter China. Okay, well, if you accept that argument, then everything hinges on the balance of power in the Indo-Pacific vis-a-vis China. And that balance of power is getting worse, in large part because the Biden Defense Department is making it worse and its budget is abysmal. And yesterday we voted on a $5 trillion bill that takes us to the lowest level of defense spending as a function of GDP in 80 years. So it's their priorities, which are all out of whack, which hinge entirely on passing a Bernie Sanders progressive budget while decimating defense, that is weakening our position vis-a-vis China. Now, by the way, I don't accept that agreement. I think our actions in Afghanistan resonate throughout the world, and I think it's a huge gift geopolitically to China that they're going to exploit. But even on their own terms, their argument fails because they are weakening the balance of power in the Indo-Pacific.
Congressman Gallagher, I've got in my hand the editorial by Nick Allen, who's the U.S. editor of The Telegraph. The headline is Joe Biden's Betrayal. Allies can never trust this president again. Pointless G7 meeting framed one of America's most embarrassing retreats as a great success. I won't read it again, but it describes that the allies were set up. They were told that there was going to be a conversation about staying. All of them want to stay, push back the deadline, get their people out. Biden rolled them and then came out and said they all agreed with him. And this argued, they will never believe Biden again. Period. He's making Trump look like the most credible president ever.
The president is lying to our faces. And I really do think, Hugh, the cynical calculation he and his advisors are making right now is that this is just a news story that will blow over. This is a cycle you can manage and message, and that a week from now, or at worst a month from now, the American people will move on to some other shiny object and they won't care about what's happening in Afghanistan. Think how cynical of a view that is. I mean, they basically think we're stupid. They think we are stupid, and therefore they can get away with lying to us. He lied about the Al-Qaeda presence in Afghanistan. He's lying about the fact that our allies were consulted. He lied about the difficulties that Americans were having getting to the airport in Kabul. This has been a string of consistent lies. Facing his first foreign policy crisis, President Biden has failed. He has failed the commander-in-chief test.
Benghazi was a dress rehearsal on a small stage for what is happening right now. Benghazi was the abandonment of a dozen Americans to terrorists. This is the abandonment of hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans to terrorists. And they're just going to deny, deny, lie, lie. And until we get the Congress back, we're not going to be able to do anything about it.
That was my wake-up moment, Hugh. I was in the National Counterterrorism Center, Ops Center, the night Benghazi happened. We got some of the first reports. I wrote one of the first summaries of it. And then the next day when I turned on the TV when I was home, I saw the way in which they spun it. Totally spun it for political purposes. As a young Marine officer, idealistic about the world, generally assuming our officials try and tell the truth and do the right thing, that was a huge, huge wake-up call for me. And one of the reasons I ran for Congress, by the way, to fix our failing foreign policy. But I think all of the progress that we've made in a bipartisan fashion, I would say, on China and other issues in the last 5 years have now been flushed down the drain in the same way Obama flushed all of the progress of the surge in Iraq down the drain when he precipitously withdrew for purely political purposes, a decade ago. Just
the only good thing that can come out of this, Congressman, is if veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan step up and run, especially those who have interpreters who've been betrayed. If they come and tell the story that they got in because their interpreter was betrayed, I'm looking for them to fill the new districts. Congressman, thank you. Always a pleasure. Talk to you next week. Keep giving those speeches on the floor of the House. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. On October 13th, my guest, Brian Westbury, and I will be in Atlanta, along with Alfredo Ortiz of the Job Creators Network at the Atlanta History Center. And it's a ticket event. You have to go and get it at am920theanswer.com. That's 6 weeks out. And 7 weeks out. And we should know the aftermath of this cowardly runaway in Afghanistan by that time, or at least begin to outline how many Americans have been left behind, Afghans, et cetera. And Brian Westbury will be able to tell us what markets have done since then, but you got to get a ticket. So go over to am920theanswer.com if you want to join us on October 13th at the Atlanta History Center. Tickets are limited. They're already selling briskly. I'm not surprised since we're going to talk about everything. Brian, a big question for you. International chaos, international disaster, and a loss of American faith, the likes of which I have never seen in my life. What does that do to markets internationally and at home?
Yeah, well, Hugh, obviously it's a sign of problems in Afghanistan, but it's a sign of deeper problems as well. I mean, we can talk about leaving people with American passports, American citizens behind. I highly doubt in the end we're going to end up with pictures of a young, blonde, Iowan that's stranded in Afghanistan. Maybe those pictures come. And I sure hope Americans remember this. I certainly will. But if you really think about this idea of stranding people, what about landlords today who the CDC has told their renters that they don't have to pay the landlord, and the landlord still has to pay the bank? Or what about kids these days who are forced to learn remotely, and therefore, and we've seen studies on this, we know they're 25% behind in math and in reading, and all they do is fall further and further behind. What about the young people out there who believe getting paid by the government to not work is actually a perfect, you know, like normal thing to do, and they don't realize how many skills they are losing each and every day they live off of the largesse of somebody else? And so this is just indicative of kind of a way of looking at and running the world, which I think is hugely damaging.
Well, there are cascading crises. Yeah, there are cascading crises, and they're cumulative in their effect. But at what point is there a tipping point and credibility of American financial guarantees become as good as credibility of guarantees to our allies that we won't bug out, which we're bugging out? I mean, when do they begin to doubt us on everything?
Yeah, and, you know, and this is, you know, unfortunately, I guess, if you want someone else to see the damage from what we're doing financially, it's really hard, because we have pumped trillions of dollars into the economy. We have borrowed trillions. That money is coursing through the system today. It's creating inflation, which is certainly an issue, but that's going to get worse over time. But it's almost like giving an automobile accident victim morphine, all right? And that is your leg is broken, your arm is broken.
Yeah.
But you get morphine, you don't feel it. And so we're living in that situation today where we're going to pay a huge price in the future. We're just not going to feel it right now. And, you know, this has happened a number of times over history. And then finally, in the late 1970s, for example, all the pain came home to roost. You know, that's when we had, you know, hostages in the Middle East. That's when we had double-digit inflation. That's when we had double-digit unemployment. And that's on its way, but it's not here yet.
You mentioned another issue about credibility. The Wall Street Journal this week ran a headline that said corporate landlords appealed to the United States Supreme Court. I was angry about that because it's not corporate landlords. It's every property owner in the United States. It's a lot of small businesses that need the rents from their small shopping centers. I mean, shopping centers are typically held by mom and pops. They're little ones, you know, 6, 7, 8 storefronts. It's not about big corporate America. Sure, there are some corporate landlords, but we're condemning all these people to fiscal insanity. 1 minute, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you get to blame the corporate landlords, the big billionaires, which means they don't need the money. On the other side, you know, we know a vast majority of rental homes are owned by true mom and pop landlords. They own 1 or 2 or 3 units that they've collected over their lifetime. This is their savings. And this is turning into a disaster, and they're going to deflect any way they can. You're absolutely right. This calling them corporate landlords just makes it seem like you can just steal from them, and that's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing. I think the court's going to strike it down. It's theft, but I think the court's going to strike it down. Westbury, WESBURY on Twitter. Join us in Atlanta at the Atlanta History Center on October the 13th. Get your tickets at AM920, The Answer Atlanta. We'll see you there along with Alfredo Ortiz of the Job Creators Network. And I'm still here. Don't go anywhere. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them
at 888-1172.
Morning Glory America, Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway live on Wednesday, August the 25th, 2021, joined by the New York Times' Peter Baker. Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning, Hugh.
You have covered American national security and political issues for a long time. Are you aware, and you've written great books of history, including the recent Jim Baker biography, are you aware of any situation where Americans have knowingly abandoned civilians in a perilous situation, as we are contemplating doing next week in Afghanistan?
I mean, that's what, you know, is on the table here. The one thing that obviously is most concerning at the White House right now is that they try not to do that. They understand the consequences, but the situation is as messy today as you've seen. And I can't think of a parallel exactly like this. And, in recent history, it's just you look at the pictures out of the airport just today. It's a humanitarian disaster. It's a it's a continual debacle, and I think it's we don't know where it's going to end, but obviously there's a real danger that it gets worse.
One caller suggested to me Corregidor, but noted that was, of course, in a time of vast war on a global scale, and MacArthur came back, but there were civilians in the Corregidor abandoned. But I don't really think that's analogous, and I can't think ever of America walking away from its civilians when its troops were withdrawing. That's the difference with Corregidor. Can you?
I can't think of an exact parallel here. Again, we don't know how it's going to end and whether there are going to be people left behind. The president says there won't be. But it's hard to see what happens just in the next few days if he sticks to this August 31st deadline. Americans, who want to get out may all get out. That's the pledge the president has made. But then what about the thousands of Afghan allies who are going to be in danger, who will not be evacuated? So it's hard to think of a historical parallel quite like this.
I don't know if you know Gareth Brown. He is the correspondent for The National in Beirut. He tweeted 4 hours ago, "Someone I'm in close contact with made it to the gates of Kabul airport last night after literally wading through a sewage drain, only to be told they were now accepting only U.S. passport and green card holders. The person has an SIV. Is that it, then? The rest are cut adrift." I'm sure you've heard other stories.
I've heard stories like that, and that's what it does feel like. That they have reached a point where they're no longer taking some of the people they have been taking in the last few days. And if that's the case, they're leaving behind people who will be at great danger. There's no question that the Taliban, will target people who were perceived as working with Americans, whether they even did or not. And that's a huge number of people, even beyond the ones who are at the gate at the Kabul airport. There are people all over the country who spent the last 20 years working with Americans, or again, we're even just perceived as working with Americans because they, in some way or another, had interactions with our people. And I think that, we're focused on what's happening at the airport now, rightly, because it's just hard to stomach some of these pictures. But long after this particular week or two go by, we've got 38 million people who are going to be left to the tender mercies of the Taliban, and it's going to be an ugly situation.
Peter Baker, is there any doubt in your mind that everything that happens to allies of the United States and to American hostages is imminently foreseeable? There isn't any surprise here. If we leave Americans, they will be held hostage. If we do not get allies out, they will be beheaded or stoned, or walls will be dipped on them. There just isn't any doubt, is there, about what's going to happen?
It doesn't seem like it. Hugh, I was there 20 years ago. I got into Afghanistan just a few days after 9/11, and I saw what the country was like then. And if you talk to people that I did when you got there, you saw a country that had been brutalized, a country where, under the control of one of the most repressive and vicious regimes in modern times. And now, 20 years later, they're coming back, and they're going to not only going to be seeking vengeance against those they perceived as being traitors to them. They're going to have more tools to do it with a more modern technology than they used to have. So I think that it's a dire situation, no question about it.
Peter, I wrote on Twitter, got mixed 50-50 response. This is worse than 9/11, not in the body count yet. We don't know what the body count will be, and not in terms of shock. We're watching it slowly. But in terms of the damage to the national character. We ran to the danger. Great Americans in the police and fire departments of New York on Flight 93. I mean, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld ran to the lawn of the Pentagon. We ran to save people. Here we are running away. Is this on the minds of the White House? Do they understand what an indelible stain this will leave on us and them?
You know, they wouldn't admit to it out loud, but I think some people in there do. You know, their calculation is a pretty cold one. It's that, you know, Americans want to get out and that Americans ultimately will be happy that we got out, assuming that there isn't loss of life among Americans. And that even if it means that the Taliban is now in control of another country and the pictures that we've seen the last few days are recycled again and again and again and part of the historical record that, in fact, you know, it doesn't matter to most Americans, that most Americans are tired of the, quote, forever wars. The calculation, you know, that it borne out to some extent by polling. But I think you're right in the sense that there is a different kind of damage done that is hard to erase. The president has said, well, gosh, Russia and China would love nothing more for us to stay forever. I think Russia and China are probably pretty happy right now watching us. Look as on the world stage. And I think that does enormous damage for many years.
And it's not just the brave Sir Robin aspect of Joe Biden. It's this article I have. I don't know if you know Nick Allen. He's the U.S. editor of The Telegraph. He has written a column this morning, Joe Biden's Betrayal, Allies Can Never Trust This President Again. And I would recommend it to everyone who subscribes to The Telegraph. He describes a G7 meeting that was floored yesterday. They had been led to believe the president was coming to discuss an extension. In fact, he announced that it would not be an extension. He rolled them, and they are pissed. They are, they got their people there, too, and they are just absolutely aghast. That kind of damage is the damage we attributed routinely to Trump, but the reality is it's been done by Biden.
Yeah, for a guy who does care about alliances, who made restoring or repairing these alliances a key promise of his presidency, he at the moment has in fact alienated them to a large extent. And when he said the other day, gosh, I don't know of any credibility problem with our allies, well, that isn't borne out by reality. Reality is that in Berlin and London and Paris, there is plenty of other places in Europe, there is enormous consternation, enormous anger about what's happening. And they do use the word betrayal. And I think that's betrayal, at the very least, of the Afghans. And I think that there's a real question about where that leads the alliance going forward.
Nick Allen, again, I'm quoting, he has a source in the administration. There's a disconnect between what Biden is telling leaders in the public and what's happening. As to Mr. Biden's speech, it was sold as an update on efforts to rescue Americans and vulnerable Afghans from the nightmare of Taliban rule. But with an audience of millions tuning in, Mr. Biden instead used it to score political points promoting his infrastructure bill. It was shameful. I mean, it is searing criticism, Peter. And I don't know if there's a chance he will change his mind. I hope he does. Do you sense there's any chance that he will? Yeah, he's just playing for time, that we'll be surprised that they've got an Inchon moment coming up somehow.
Well, it's a good question because, you know, what the military would say is if we're going to stay past August 31st to continue the evacuation, we need to know now. That obviously is not what President Biden has said. Now, he has said he's asked them for contingencies of what would happen if we had to stay past August 31st to complete more evacuation. And we don't know what that would entail. But he has been very resistant to that. He has a deal with the Taliban, and he thinks that sticking to it is the best way forward. But it's hard to imagine the next three days or however many days we're talking about now elapsing and getting everybody that we want to get out. What does he do at that point? That's a huge decision with enormous consequences.
Peter, last question. You wrote that remarkable book about Bush and Cheney, Days of Fire. What do you think the former president and the former vice president are thinking right now? You just said he's made a deal with the Taliban. What do you think Bush Cheney are thinking?
Well, you know, Bush has actually made very clear how upset he is about this. You know, he doesn't speak out very much, and he's done it in a gingerly, you know, restrained way. But he's put out a couple of statements where he's just talked about how heartbroken he is watching what's happening. And he frames it in the context of, you know, our responsibility to our Afghan allies who helped us and people who you know, need to be evacuated. But in that statement, as restrained as it is, you can hear his consternation. But I was with him at an event in April back when the announcement was first made. And that was what he was talking about then, is, you know, we have a real responsibility to people who helped us, and we better make sure we do everything we can to protect them and get them out. So he has been concerned about this for a long time. Laura Bush, very concerned about it, particularly Afghan women, Afghan girls, an issue she spent a lot of time on. And so I think it's a tough time for them.
Peter Baker, thank you for joining me. Continue great reporting. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. 1-800-520-1234. What do you think about Biden's betrayal? It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Portions of...
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, Inside the Beltway, live on Wednesday, the 25th of August 2021. I'm joined by Senator Rick Scott in Florida. Good morning, Senator Scott. Welcome. It's great to talk to you.
Good morning, Hugh. This is a pretty big disaster we got going on over in Afghanistan. America chased out of Afghanistan by the Taliban. Who would have ever thought this could happen?
Well, Senator, I just talked to Peter Baker, who's been covering the war for a long, long time, and he cannot think, nor can I, of any situation where American troops have abandoned American civilians behind enemy lines. Do you know of any situation like that?
No, and it's disgusting. We're hearing a lot of people in our office worried about, you know, there's American citizens over there, and they're also worried about our allies, and they're also worried about Afghanis that helped us all along. So, look, Joe Biden let terrorism win. He's endangered Americans that are there, Americans that are here. He's endangered our allies. We've got to have an immediate bipartisan, bicameral investigation to Biden's failed Afghanistan withdrawal. So we got to get answers here. And I think one of the big answers is Biden even capable of doing this? He's been on vacation since January 20th. Is this guy okay? I mean, I worry about him. I think we have a real conversation whether Joe Biden is capable of doing this job.
I don't think he has the capacity to respond in real time to rapidly changing facts. I don't think he's senile or has dementia. I just think he's old. Senator, there is a Wall Street Journal editorial this morning that reads in part, as long as most U.S. citizens get out and there are no American hostages, Biden figures most will quickly forget about the chaos at the airport and the Afghans left behind. I don't agree with that. Do you disagree with their cynical, cold calculation that Americans will turn the page on this disaster?
I don't, and here's why. You know, if you look at what he's done, we have the video in front of us. We've got that these guys had no plan. We know. I mean, we watched all the individuals holding on to that plane. We've watched all this. We know that we hear the stories, right? So those stories are going to continue to stay in our minds. I mean, look at what he's done to the border. What he's done to the border is not show up, and so we don't have as much press there. But there is unbelievable amount of press here, and it's going to be heart-wrenching when you know what happened to American citizens. And because they're not going to all get out. I mean, there's no plan to get everybody out by the end of the month. We shouldn't have a time deadline. We should have a what's our job deadline. We should tell the Taliban to go shove it.
Senator, have you gotten any estimate at all of the minimum number of Americans who want out? That would seem to me to be the denominator, the minimum number of Americans.
They can't tell us. I mean, I've been asking. I've been on conference calls. They cannot tell us. I mean, they have no plan.
They often say they don't know how many are there, but I never hear the follow-up. Can you give us at least the minimum that you know? Are the people who've reached out to you, do they never offer, you know, we've got at least 1,000 requests to get out?
None. And by the way, we know people are having a hard time getting to the airport. I know people that have gotten beaten on the way to the airport. It is every day we get more phone calls to our office about people that are worried about, you know, their family members or their friends trying to get out. And these guys are, I mean, you can't be this incompetent.
Well, they are this incompetent.
Biden administration has done.
Senator, I've talked to Secretary of State Pompeo, former Secretary of State Pompeo, former National Security Advisor O'Brien, former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley. I've talked to Tom Cotton. Now I'm talking to you. Do you believe President Trump would have allowed this to happen, or would he have said when the Doha agreements were violated, at least as early as March, with the attack on forward operating base Chapman, would he have abrogated the agreement and struck back?
Absolutely not. I mean,
he would have struck back.
Just like his tweets, but he would not have allowed this to happen. He would have said, we are Americans, and we're going to stand up for Americans' rights. and to leave American, tell America, I mean, you just can't believe this, to leave Americans stranded in Afghanistan. I mean, I would never have a thought that any president would do that.
Well, I have to, do you have Democratic colleagues who are flabbergasted as well? Because this will be an indelible stain on Joe Biden. He will be the cowardly lion president.
They're hardly talking. At least, I mean, look, I respect Jack Reed, who's a Democrat from Rhode Island, the head of the Armed Services Committee, the chair. He said, we're going to have an investigation. And Mark Warner said the same thing. So I'm glad that they've done something. But you listen to this stuff. These Democrats don't want to say a word about what they see as it's even worse than incompetence. You have a job as the commander in chief of this, of our armed forces, to defend Americans. Americans are not there because they chose to be in a dangerous place. They're there, a lot of them, because they're out there doing things that the American government wanted them to do. They worked in not-for-profits and things over there. And so, and then to leave our allies stranded. I know of a story of a guy from South Africa that he was working for an American company, and they just poof, they're gone. And so,
Senator, I want to go back to when you were governor of Florida for 8 years. And when you were governor of Florida for 8 years, I don't know how many hurricanes you dealt with, but you'd see them coming, right? You would see them getting stronger.
You had a plan.
You had a plan.
I mean, we had a plan. And I went around and I educated everybody every day, all day long, to say, look, you're going to need to evacuate. This is what the National Hurricane Center is saying. You're going to have 9 foot of storm surge. You're going to have 140 mile winds. You're going to have 14 inches of rain. You're going to have flooding. You cannot survive this. Where was that in Afghanistan?
I don't know. Senator, I don't know.
It makes you mad that we have elected a president that would do this to American citizens and to our military. We have people in his administration that are not standing up. They have to stand up and say, I'm not going to put up with this. But they're all putting up with it. Would you put up with it if you worked for a president that did this? No.
Now I want to extend the analogy. You just mentioned the National Hurricane Center. Is that in Florida?
Yeah, it's in Miami.
Okay, imagine
Graham runs it.
Imagine, I think closing Bagram is the equivalent of closing the National Hurricane Center as the storm approaches. I really do. I think it's the equivalent of not sending out the hurricane hunting planes.
Right. I mean, but you can't. I mean, it makes you mad when you hear the stories. I mean, who trusts us anymore? Why would you trust America again while Joe Biden is president? If you're Taiwan, why would you trust us?
And
if you're Duque down in Colombia, why would you trust that America will stand up for what they say they believe in? Because they're not.
Well, there's a story in the Telegraph this morning of the G7 call yesterday where President Biden surprised our allies by rolling them. They all came prepared to urge an extension of the deadline, and he rolled them. He announced, we're not extending the deadline. Do you think you can talk him out of that, Senator? Is he talking to anybody?
Here's what is disgusting to me. What is Austin doing? What is the Secretary of State doing? He's decided to work for an individual, all right, that would make a decision like this, and he's going to sit there and keep doing that? Or General Milley? I mean, I wouldn't do that, would you? Would you work for somebody that walked away from American citizens and walked away from our allies? No.
I think the military has to stay on post, but Secretary Austin, no. And ambassadors around the world. I just do not understand, because everything that's going to happen is foreseeable. If Americans are held hostage, if they're beheaded, if Taliban starts executing, as they already have begun to execute, the reports are credible and documented. They're killing people.
Right. And Biden's okay with this? He's not doing anything about it? I mean, he's not calling them out for what their atrocities. He won't call anybody in the world out for their atrocities. He wouldn't call the Cuban regime out for their atrocities. He doesn't call out China for their atrocities. And he's clearly not calling the Taliban out for their atrocities. That is his job. Stand up for freedom and stand up for what this country believes in.
So last question, Senator. You mentioned this earlier. About questions about the president's competence and capacity. Do any of your colleagues across the aisle share that with you in a confidential moment without naming a name?
None of them will say anything like that right now. I mean, but you look at this. I don't know. I mean, I my heart goes out to Biden. He's clearly not doing the job. Why can't he do the job? Is he sick? I mean, what is the reason? But we have to have a president that's going to stand up and do the job. He's commander in chief of the most lethal military force in the world. Stand up.
That's well put. Senator Rick Scott, thank you. Normally we talk politics. This is not a moment for politics because it's simply too dire, but I appreciate your joining us. Thank you, Senator. I want to tell everybody, is the senator still there? I want to ask him about Haiti, by the way. Is he still there? Did he leave? Senator, I wanted to ask you about Haiti before you left. I know you have lots of Haitians in Florida. How bad is the situation there?
Oh, it's bad. I mean, we're trying to help. We're trying to help everybody we can. We got a significant Haitian population, especially in Palm Beach and Miami, and we've got our offices are working with that. But look at all these problems. The Biden, he's not showing up to help anybody anywhere.
So I'm pushing food for the poor, but I don't think the American people actually know about Haiti because our attention is fixed on the disaster that is Afghanistan. But is it as bad as 2012?
We don't know the numbers right now. It's really bad, though. When you talk to the Haitians down there, I mean, and because there's no focus on it, they're not getting the support they need.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Thanks. I called you back from getting into the car, and I appreciate it.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.